Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the news edition of From the Touchline for 90 Minutes. I'm your host, Todd Starr. I'm here with my new co-host, Aaron Eisen. New edition of From the Touchline. A big welcome to you, Aaron.
Thanks, Todd. Appreciate it. Great to be here. Lovely day.
It is a lovely day here in Seattle, Washington. We've had rare sun breaks coming through. And, yeah, we're ready to go. So, big, as always, Aaron, there's a lot going on in the world of soccer, and we're going to attempt to put our spin on it for the next 90 minutes here. We've got Champions League. We've got a fantastic finish in the Premier League looming, and as well as a tight relegation battle there in the Premier League. And, of course, we've got the story of David Moyes in Manchester United and who's going to become their next manager. We'll talk about Ryan Giggs. And we'll talk about where Manchester United is heading, and how they make their next move within the coaching carousel with them. And we're going to start with the Champions League, Aaron. What can you say? What can you tell me about an All Madrid final being played in Portugal? I think we've got a great game on our hands with Real and Atletico Madrid.
Well, absolutely. It's Atletico being the team that a lot of people don't know about. Diego Simeone, the former Argentine captain, big-time player in his own right. Everybody, I think, remembers him if you were following it back in the 90s, remember 1998 when Simeone was said to have gotten David Beckham sent off the field when he got that red card. That same man, interesting guy, clearly a leader, clearly knows his football, his soccer. I mean, tremendous. Well, he's talking about Atletico Madrid, tremendous talent. We're actually talking yesterday to a guy. He wants to know who is scouting for Atletico Madrid for their strikers. You think about the guys they've had going through. Suarez. I mean, now he's got Diego Costa, Diego Forlan, Torres. I mean, who are these people? Incredible talent. So, anyways, I mean, to go back to your whole point, Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid, the city's going to be – it's going to be a better place to be in Madrid than it is the actual game in Lisbon, I think.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say that would be a night that would last you extremely long, no matter what the result of that game is. And, you know, I would say in terms of Atletico, I was lucky enough a couple of years back to go over and study in Madrid at both clubs. I spent 4 days at Real and 4 days at Atletico, and the theories and the business practice behind the two clubs is so opposite. That it's very interesting that they would come together in this game. Atletico is very, very committed to bringing players through their system into their first team, while Real Madrid is dead set on their business model of bringing players through their academy in order to sell them, to get money to go out and buy the Cristiano Ronaldos and the Karim Benzemas of the world. At the time I was at Real, Guti was still playing there, and he was the only player in the first team that had come through the Real Madrid youth system. And just a very interesting two different approaches. Obviously, it's been better for Real Madrid to this point, but these players that Atletico Madrid has that they have developed, and not all of their players, but they're starting to come through. And when we ask who are these guys, we don't know who they are. Well, they've been at Atletico Madrid since they were young players, and now they're finally coming through into the first team, and you're seeing the results of that.
Yeah, I think the matchup alone is exciting, and especially since Atletico Madrid is not some team that's completely forgotten about La Liga and is just doing the Champions League as a one-off thing. I mean, they're at the top of La Liga as well. This isn't just a one-time kind of deal. And this may be the only season they get a chance to do it, because you're right, Scott. I mean, I could see Real Madrid next year buying one or two Atletico Madrid players if they would go. And what will happen to Diego Simeone, you know, and we can talk about that later, about the coaching situation. That's a whole other topic.
We will, and the reality is Real Madrid could just buy Atletico Madrid and just say, listen, we don't want to compete with you anymore. We're just going to buy our own club.
We're not a reserve team now.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, the amount of money that Real Madrid, they're the most popular team in the world.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about their battle with Bayern Munich. It really wasn't a battle. I guess maybe in the first leg it was, but, you know, there was just so much build-up to the match in Munich. I was even guilty of thinking Bayern's going to get an early goal and this is going to be just a great game. And it was the other way around. I mean, Real Madrid, you know, two goals from Ramos in that first half, and you felt like after the second one went in, it was pretty much done. You couldn't see. You could just see the Bayern players. It's not easy to play against Real Madrid. And when you're trying to come from three goals down, it's not an easy task. And it, you know, I thought it was interesting because here you have Pep Guardiola coaching Bayern Munich as he coached the Barcelona teams that Real Madrid just couldn't conquer here a few years ago. And now you have Real Madrid, a team that was built to beat Barcelona, and in the same right, they were built to beat the new Bayern Munich, and they did beat them, and they beat them badly. 4-0, 5-0 aggregate, and they're on to the final. What do you think, Aaron?
Yeah, I think it's Real Madrid. It was their time was coming. I mean, they've always had those, like you said, battles with Guardiola, and it meant a lot for them, I'm sure, to beat them, especially Sergio Ramos getting those two goals. I've seen his face downfallen more than once after losses to Barcelona, but they knew what they were getting coming in against Bayern Munich and how much possession Bayern Munich had in the first leg. And they did it again, and Real Madrid just shut them down. Like you said, getting those two goals up 20 minutes into the game at Allianz Arena. Those Munich fans haven't seen that all year. And Guardiola was quoted saying, you know, people can criticize the short passing game that he coaches, but he's not going to give up on that system. He can't just go away from what he believes in. And so he'll be around him, and they'll be back, and they're going to get Lewandowski in the summertime, and they'll be back. There's no question. But it was Real Madrid's time this time.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, it was interesting because Real Madrid, they sat in a little bit and countered. But when you're countering with Di Maria, Benzema, and Ronaldo, I don't really consider that countering. I mean, I just consider that a really lethal attack. But, you know, they sat in a little bit because you have to sit in and let a team like Bayern keep the ball. They're going to keep the ball. Just like Barcelona, they're going to keep the ball. It's which areas are you going to let them keep it in? And,
exactly.
And they allowed them to keep it in areas that weren't very dangerous. And then when they got it, they went quick, they attacked quick, and they got right at them. And, you know, I mean, knowing that they needed a goal, Bayern had to press a little bit at the beginning of the game, and they got caught. They got caught twice, and, you know, and that was the game. But I will say this. Cristiano Ronaldo, to me, you know, he's coming. I think it's interesting timing with the World Cup coming here in a month and a half, whenever it is, and here he is in the final. He's been on the verge of being by far the best player in the world, and Messi has had his time, and, you know, Suarez has had his time this year at Liverpool, but I see potentially this being set up for Cristiano Ronaldo to just, in the next 2 months, to just become solidified the best player in the world. He can do that if he has a great final. And if he has a great World Cup, he will be. And I think, you know, when he missed that, when they could have gone up 2-0 in the first leg and he missed the sitter, when he tried to open up with the inside of his foot and went over the bar, I was thinking, gosh, those are the ones that he has to, you know, that's the best player in the world has to score that goal. And I'm kind of excited to see Ronaldo get the chance to be on this stage and do what you know he's wanted to do and what he's been primed to do for years.
Yeah, I think it will be interesting. I remember the Champions League final in 2008 when he played for Manchester United against Chelsea, and he really used a little young then. You know, he missed his PK. He did score a goal in the game, actually, but he was kind of lost a little bit. He wasn't the player he is now, obviously, all this time later. But
yeah.
You're right. He is. This is coming into his time. And do you think he could take Portugal pretty far in the world? I mean, they got a tough group. They're in our group.
Well, they are in our group. If you're American, yes, which we are. I don't know that he can take Portugal all the way to the World Cup final and win that. But I think that he can have a great performance. I don't know, like, if you remember the World Cup in the U.S., the Romanian Haji, Romania had nobody on their team.
True.
And all of a sudden this left-footed little midget is just pinging balls around. And he took them as far as they could possibly go. And you knew at the end of that tournament, Haji was one of the best players in the world. There was no question.
Absolutely.
To me, being a great player, you make the guys around you better. It's not just you. And so to me, that's the interesting point. Can Ronaldo make these guys around him better? Can he make that team better? And I think you saw in qualifying that he started to take that role on a little bit more, because I think you're spot on. He is getting older. He's more mature. You know, you've got it as a player. We both know you realize your time is coming. You're a little sore in the morning. You know, maybe
True.
You're just not as quick. We feel that way every Tuesday morning after our over 30 game. But, But, you know, I mean, he's a smart guy. He knows that, you know, you only get so many World Cups. And, you know, so this is a big one for him, and I'm looking forward to it. Back to Madrid, though, you know, the one thing I see and the one thing that came out of that game against Munich that could be an issue was the card to Xabi Alonso.
Yeah.
Because Xabi Alonso is a huge part of how they're able to play Real Madrid, and without him in that final, that hurts. That's going to hurt big time.
Yeah, he is the you're exactly right, Todd. He's the replacement of basically what Claude Makélélé was back in the Zidane days.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he is. An unbelievable passer. He's the rock sitting in front of the back line, kind of dictates the play, lets Modric and whoever else is in there go. I mean, Essien kind of did that role just a little bit, but no one's as good as Xabi Alonso.
Yeah, I mean,
for Real Madrid.
He's got to be the best holding midfield player in the year or in the world. He has to be. I mean, when I was in Madrid, we got to go to the Bernabeu and watch them play Atletico Bilbao, and he was. He was the best player on the park. There was no question. And you know, he's just sitting in. He's just great defensively, tactically. He's very sound. He's always covering right areas, and on the ball, he's just good. You know, connects the dots. They're able to play through him at any point. So, you know, it's a tough one for them to miss him, but, you know, I think it just sets up just a great game. Let's talk about the other game real quick, and let's go to that 3-1 thrashing at Stamford Bridge, Atletico over Chelsea. You know, it looked good early for Chelsea there. Fernando Torres, the old Atletico boy, came from Atletico Madrid, gets the 36-minute goal. And then in the 44th minute, Adrian sets the game 1-1. And really at that point with the away goal, Atletico knew they had it, and Chelsea had to come out of their shell a little bit. And, you know, the game was on at that point, Aaron.
Yeah, it was the second-half performance of Atletico Madrid just coming out fearless, really. The back line holds strong, but the rest of the team just went forward, and the passing, the movement, I mean, they limited Ivanovic and as Piliqueta from going forward, they just absolutely gave them fits at the back. I mean, Diego Costa, he was actually, yeah, he had quite an effort trying to win the balls in the air with John Terry. I mean, that's a big role to do, but it was incredible play. You know, Juan Fran coming from the right, that little number 10 sitting in the middle, Auden, I think his name is, just amazing stuff. And they always had three guys on the ball, always had a triangle, always moving it around. Some great goals. I mean, it was incredible.
Well, and after the first leg, let's be honest, I mean, the first leg, I felt like they could have played that game for 3 days, like a cricket match, and nobody would have scored because they're both sitting there. This is just a chess match, just waiting to see who's going to do what. So to go with the contrast from the first leg, that was extremely boring and not really free-flowing, and go to that second leg and to see you know, to see just the way they played. It's you know, after watching that, I haven't seen them play a ton this year. But you know, just to see that, you know now why they're on top of the La Liga. You can see it. I mean, they're just a very good team. And I'll agree with what you said earlier on about Simeone. You know, we know him as a player, then he was the guy that got Beckham sent off, and I've hated him for years because of that. But he's a very good player. You know, he was a great player in his own right. But, and you know that guys that played at that level, they know what it's about. They get that team, they're coaching that team, and you know that they know how to push the right buttons. And, you know, like we said, we'll talk about him later when we get into the top managers. But, you know, he's obviously done a great job. And I think in overall, Atletico has done a great job of building that team. You know, they brought in the right guys, Diogo Costa. You know, they brought in the right guys to mix in with the guys that they brought through their system. And, you know, it's a very good team, very impressive.
Yeah, I think they're going to be real dangerous. I mean, obviously they're not favorites against Real Madrid, so they're going to have kind of a chip on their shoulder. They've always been the little brother in Madrid. They've always been the team that's kind of kicked around. They've not had the money. And, I mean, they've got everything to play for. Real Madrid, on the other hand, playing for their 10th title, which is they've been waiting since 2002. That's a big deal for them as well. So, obviously, everybody's got a ton to play for. It's an incredible matchup. I'm getting on the plane tomorrow to go to Madrid. So I wish.
Right.
There, but I can't wait to hear how the city is. I mean, it's going to be amazing.
And what would this mean to Real and to Cristiano Ronaldo? You know, I mean, it's like I said, like we talked about a little bit earlier, you know, they've been kind of on the fringe here, right? Just ready to break through as this great team. And does this solidify them, you know, with Gareth Bale and Ronaldo right. and all these guys, does this solidify them as a great team? Everybody sees Barcelona of the early 2010 to 2013, or maybe even say 2009 to 2013, 2008 as a great team, one of the great teams of all time.
For sure.
Will this set Real Madrid up to be one of the great teams of all time?
I don't think so. Not yet. They have to do a lot more than just win a Champions League. But yeah, I mean they could be well on their way. But you know, it's not to compare them to Barcelona like that. The way they have that class come up, like the Manchester United class of 1992. You know, I don't think you can compare that yet. I mean, these are players that are bought, like Gareth Bale just showing up, most expensive transfer of all time. I mean, that's them just handpicking players from around the world. But they could well on their way. They're obviously, Ancelotti's doing something right, gelling them and getting them going. I mean, if they were to be on the same level as the Barcelona team, they'd be on the top of La Liga or already have it won and be well on their way to winning everything this year. But that's just not the case. I mean, they're still in the title fight, but it's not over yet. So
well, and let's talk about Ancelotti a little bit. I mean, what a great job he's done there. You know,
yeah,
Mourinho
there's only
there
a few
and,
coaches
and,
in the world.
And,
yeah, there's only a few coaches in the world that can take all those stars and make them happy and make them work like a team, like they're doing. I mean, that's a big ask. So especially, you know, you got especially Cristiano Ronaldo, who at times can be, I think, can be problematic if he doesn't get his way. And Ancelotti, you know, he's top class. He's been with big clubs before, Chelsea, AC Milan. He's dealt with everyone, so he knows what he's doing. But it's impressive, and I'm really excited to see the game. I mean, really excited.
Well, yeah, and I think if you look at Ancelotti, I mean, he's been under a lot of pressure because Real's not on top of the La Liga.
Right.
You know, and they were even saying if he didn't make this final that he may be on his way out. And it's just so funny how you can go from, you know, you might be on your way out to all of a sudden, yeah, he's one of the greatest coaches. It can turn so quickly for those managers. And, you know, Mourinho wasn't able to go in, and he went in and did a great job at Real. But, you know, I mean, there's so much more to coaching Real. It's not just dealing with the stars. It's dealing with the press in Madrid. It's dealing with, you know, the boardroom and the expectations that are there. It's not easy. It's not an easy job, and I think anybody who goes and takes that job has to be a guy like a Mourinho or a guy like Ancelotti who has thick skin. They've dealt with this before. They've been, you know, they've been in a big club before, and you know, they're able to deal with the press and the expectations because it's just not easy to deal with that.
Right. And I don't think anybody goes to Real Madrid saying, "Oh, I'm going to be here for the next decade." You know, it's a 3 to 4 year job at the most.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time Real Madrid had a coach longer than that, longer than 4 years. I think Vincent Del Bosque was there for 3 or 4 years, something like that. I have to look that up. But, you know, it's a quick stay. And Ancelotti, you know, obviously we're kind of getting into the coaching thing now. But
we are. It's okay. Well, it'll carry over. But, you know, I mean, I just think that this matchup of Real Atletico, I mean, to me, either way, it was going to be good. After Real beat Bayern, I was excited because either it was going to be Mourinho playing against Real with Chelsea, which mm-hmm. would have been fantastic storyline, or it was going to be an all-Madrid final with really two such different clubs. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, a Man United where similarities between the two clubs. This is just two different clubs and different approaches, and you know, it's just going to be a fantastic game. I'm really looking forward to the game, and I don't think I've been looking. I wouldn't be looking forward to. I'm looking forward to this as much as I would if Manchester United was playing in the final.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting. You know, last year it was Germany in the Bundesliga. What are they doing right now? What is La Liga? What do you think's changed? Do you think it's just a year for La Liga? I mean, obviously the two Madrid teams in the Champions League final. You got Sevilla and Valencia in the Europa. Kind of Europa League semifinals. I mean, they're looking good. They're the only country in Europe right now with four teams still to play.
Yeah, I mean, it's been, you know, it's well documented, and I think Spain has been one of the top leagues for some time. You know, when you have, I mean, if you look at any of the big leagues, you've got your top group, your top, you know, your top five in England. It's your top four usually. You know, in Spain, you got your top two teams in France. But I just think that, you know, the Atleticos are getting better. You know, those teams that have been below Real and Barcelona for a few years, they're just getting better, and they're just bringing in better players. And you know, the style of soccer is good, and you know, I just think it's been a good year for them for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, you're listening to Todd Sovereign, Aaron Heisen here on From the Touchline for 90 Minutes. You can get us on Blog Talk Radio as well as BackSportsPage.com. Listeners, you can call into the show and talk with us live at 760-283-3466. You can text into the show 360-920-7273. And, Aaron, the phone lines are just blowing up here. You know, people want to talk to the new co-host here. It's just unbelievable. We're going to move on, though. We're going to talk about the Premier League. There's so much going on in the Premier League right now. You've got a battle at the top for the championship. Liverpool, Chelsea, and Man City battling there. You've got a battle at the bottom for relegation. Cardiff, Fulham, Norwich, Sunderland, Aston Villa even. And, yeah, let's get into it. We're going to be talking about this for a while. Let's just start with Liverpool. And they had their chance and they just couldn't finish it. They couldn't do it.
Yeah, it was, you know, Brendan Rodgers later said they parked two buses. You know, Mourinho parked two buses behind the goals. But what do you expect with Mourinho on the road? Chelsea are going to play like that. Seen it before. But they won. And unlucky for Steven Gerrard on that slip. I felt a little bad for him because, you know, he's a quality player. Didn't really deserve it. But Demba Ba, great finish. And then you see Chelsea kind of took the air out of Liverpool a little bit, put them on edge. And they tremendous attacking in the second half. I mean, that counterattack, that Sterling is an extraordinary player. I can't wait to see what he becomes in the next couple of years. I think he's fabulous. He's got Sturridge in there. Obviously, Luis Suarez. It'll be interesting to see what happens to him in the summertime, but obviously that's in the future. I mean, they definitely have the best attack in the Premier League, hands down. And Chelsea, you know, kudos to them. They defended well. They did brilliantly. They didn't have to deal with a bunch of crosses, which is what they're good at, and they stuck in there and getting the goal in the second half. And finishing 2-0, that was well done. So you know, they kept the Premier League race alive.
Yeah, and what it's really set up. I mean, it's really now set up for Man City to take this title. You know, you've got Liverpool. They're away at Palace this weekend, which is not an easy task. Not an easy task at all. City were able to go in last week. They won 2-0, put themselves in this position. But you know, for Liverpool to go into Palace, not an easy task, so that's a tough one. And then they'll be home in Newcastle, which is, I mean, Newcastle's just giving points like candy to people right now. So you can count them in on that. If you look at Chelsea, Chelsea's got a tough one because Chelsea's got, they've got Norwich and they've got Cardiff. and you're talking about, if you were going to look at that and say, yeah, those are two teams at the bottom of the table, but we're going to get into it in a second here. These are two teams that have everything to play for. The amount of money that they're playing for to stay in the Premier League is off the charts. And so you've got Chelsea going in to play two teams that have absolutely everything to play for, and that's not an easy task at all. So you've got that, and then here you have City. City's going to do it this week at Everton. That's where it's going to be won or lost. They have to go away to Everton. Everton is still got a chance to slip into that final Champions League spot there over Arsenal. So you've got everything to play for with Everton at their house. It's going to be a tough one. But if City wins that game, I think City's going to win the title.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think Manchester City, like you said, get that job done at Everton, who've come so close. I thought they were going to beat Southampton. Southampton handed it to them 2-0. I thought they were going to get the job done 2 weeks before that. I can't remember who it was that they lost to. Before they had the big win over Manchester United. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's happening for Everton personally, but City gets that game done at Goodison Park, and then, you know, like I said, they've got Villa and West Ham, two teams that really are struggling badly. Villa really, really down there in the relegation zone.
Speaking of coaching carousels, I think West Ham is going to be
Yeah.
Sam Allardyce is going to take his massive head and go to a different club, or they're going to make him take his massive head. And I'm not talking he's got a big head as an ego. I mean, physically, his head is double the size of most normal human beings. So I think he's going to, and somewhere in there, in that head, there's no soccer brain on how to play proper soccer. So I don't know what the deal is there, but I know that Man City, if that's their last game and they have to win that game against West Ham at home to win the title, they're going to win that game, and they're going to win it by a lot. So it's going to be interesting. You know, I mean, for me, I being a Manchester United supporter, this is like the worst possible situation. I'm really looking at either Liverpool or Man City winning the title, which is enough to put me on suicide watch.
if you had to pick between one, which one?
Oh, God. I'm going to say this.
I mean, I think you got to go with City. I think, I mean, Liverpool's got 18 titles. They're only two behind Manchester United. You know, one more, they're right knocking on the door. That's the way I would look at it. I mean, City, they win another one. Yeah, they won. What is that? Number two?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I think you could go with City just because I don't want Liverpool. But I will say, Suarez, you know, winning player of the year, I agree with that. I think he's been the best player.
Yeah.
He's a very good player. There's no question. He's
a
psychopath,
crazy,
and he's an idiot. But he's who bites people's arms? I don't know who these people are.
No, I mean, and his antics on the field, it's a lot to take, but some of the stuff he does, I've never seen before from anyone.
And I will say this, the one thing I really appreciate about his movement off the ball is fantastic. If you watch his movement off the ball, it's unbelievable. I mean, he's not just ending up in these positions with the ball. His movement, the timing of it, where the spaces he's getting into is very clever. He's very good. So, you know, I do respect him. I also, as much as it pains me to say, I have gained a little respect for Brendan Rodgers because I think he's come in. Again, you go into Liverpool, it's a similar situation to a Real Madrid where you go in there, there's going to be expectations. You've got to deal with the boardroom. You've got to deal with the press.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's done a good job as much as it pains me to say it. He has done a good job, and they are sitting there. But at the same time, he bottled it. He had the chance, and he bottled it. So, I see this as Man City's title. That's my prediction. And I think they're gonna grab it because I think they're gonna win at Everton, and I think they're gonna beat Villa and West Ham and do it.
Yeah, I mean it's definitely set for them, and they know Pellegrini knows that he's got the players to do it. They've got the massive squad. One more time around, and then they'll hit the shopping market again in the summertime. Although it will be interesting to see what that UEFA ban is going to be like for them, whether they have to limit players or what's going to happen. But that's a whole other ball game.
That will be. And in the next few weeks, I'm looking forward to the show the next few weeks, getting into the transfer time.
So much going on. It's just great.
Just one of my favorite times of the year, the transfer time. You know,
on top.
Who's going where and who's paying what. It's going to happen here
Cup,
soon.
So much. MLS heating up. Gosh, so much.
Yeah, it's going to be a good summer. It's going to be a great summer.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about the bottom of the table. Talk about the bottom of the table, and let's start with Cardiff. They're sitting in a situation where, I mean, they can get out. And I'm going to talk about a way that I've figured out that Cardiff can get out. But it's not looking good for them. The good news is they play away to Newcastle. So you can give them 3 points almost right there, I'm pretty sure.
I think that's absolutely a possible victory right there. Alan Pardew's team's kind of hitting the beach already, and players are some. There's a lot of transfer talk with them already about a couple of players, Loic Remy.
And this is a whole other story, but I just have to mention this because I can't stand Alan Pardew. But I mean, if you're playing on Newcastle and your coach headbutts a guy you're playing against, I mean, that's not something where I'm like, oh yeah, this is great. My coach is awesome. He's headbutting opposing players. I'm looking at this guy going, you're an absolute clown. I don't want to play for you. It's embarrassing.
Yeah, he's done a couple of things where he got himself banned and had to sit up in the stands for various arguments and getting, you know, just stay out of that stuff. I can understand you get competitive, but he absolutely crossed the line there. And will Pardew stay his whole contract? I'm not sure.
I don't know.
I think he's got one more year.
Maybe we'll talk about that at some point, but hopefully it'll just be – that'll consist of just me caning on Alan Pardew. That's my hope. So Cardiff is away to Newcastle, and then we already talked about home Chelsea.
Right.
No, I think they could get the 33 points. I think Cardiff could.
Yeah,
you got four.
That's your win.
You got Fulham at Stoke and home to Crystal Palace. Those are two very, very tough tasks right there. And really, Fulham, I mean, they were up 2-0 last week. I mean, you could say missed opportunity, but 2-0 up on a hole. I think they were in the 72nd minute or somewhere in the 70s, and they've given up two goals, and they've dropped those 2 points. I mean, they don't drop those 2 points, and they're safe right now.
Yeah.
And I just—it's just unbelievable. So I'm looking at them, and I just don't know. I think that they could stay on 31 points. They might get a draw out of one of those games, I think. But away to Stoke is a tough game, and we've already talked about Crystal Palace isn't an easy task to play against them. So I don't know. I think it's a tough situation for Fulham.
Yeah, I actually have the privilege of seeing Fulham play in the fall. They hosted Spurs, and they have a good team. They have good players. They had Berbatov at the time, which is he's on another level, but. I mean, Scott Parker and, the Risa, Johnny Risa, I mean, getting down the sideline, they're good players.
I was going to say Aaron Hines.
Yeah, oh, yeah, and I was out there, too, running around. they did well, and they actually scored first. They scored first on Spurs. They were leading them, and then you could just kind of see something. They kind of just stopped playing a little bit. Or I don't know what it was. It was tough to describe, but you could just see Spurs got a goal, and then Fulham kind of slowly collapsed, and that's been their season. They're a good team. They've been in there, and then it's the last 20 minutes where there's a collapse just for 2 seconds. The other team gets a goal, then nicks something at the very end, and that's it, and they're out for 3 points. I'm right there with you, Todd. I don't see Fulham staying up.
Well, and then we can talk Norwich, and I mean, talk about a bad schedule. But you're away to Chelsea and you're home to Arsenal. I mean,
yeah,
that's a tough one. I mean, it can be done, and they could do it. And really, they you know, one result, I think they're safe. The Norwich is, but
yep.
I just don't know. I just don't know if I see that happening. And then let's talk Sunderland. Sunderland is sitting out of the zone, out of the relegation zone, just based on goal differential. But they also have a game in hand. Unfortunately, one of their games is away to Manchester United.
Now heating up. A few weeks ago, that would have been an easy game.
Yeah,
that would have been 3 points.
He was handing out three points. Yeah, come on in. Yeah, you want three points? Here you go. Okay.
Because they only took care of him in the League Cup, so like, oh, we can do this again.
He might still be. David Moyes might. I mean, it's not like he has anything going on. He might be outside of Old Trafford trying to hand out 3 points to random people on the streets. But so you've got them. Then you're home to West Brom, which is a team that's kind of. I mean, we're going to call them for the sake of this show, quote unquote, safe. But
they're
teetering, right? I mean, they're 1 point out of what I would consider danger.
Yeah.
So they've got a lot to play for. And then you've got Swansea, and Swansea's pretty much safe both ways. They're not going up. They're not going down. And, you know, I mean, that might be a game they can take. So Sunderland, interesting for them. And then you look at Villa.
Yep.
Villa could be a team. They're sitting on 35 right now, but 35 might be in the relegation zone, and I'm not sure. Villa's got 3 games, Hull, at City, at Spurs. I don't see them winning either of those last two. They have to get a result against Hull this weekend. They have to.
Yep, and that's not an easy win either, obviously. And I think Hull's got their heads in the FA Cup final at this point, but still, they'll be putting up a fight. Steve Bruce has got his team well organized. I mean, I think they can get a draw at Spurs. Spurs are, you know, they're kind of also another team I think that's checking out just a little bit this year, even though they still have Europa League. But there's an argument by some who say, do you even want to get into that competition? You just have to spend that much more on your team. But it's interesting. I think if I'm looking at West Brom, if I'm looking at Villaville, they've got a chance to stay up there. I mean, like you said, the game at City, that's going to be a loss for sure. But they do need to get 3 points at Hull. And then going to Spurs, I think they can get a draw and hang in there.
So take a look at this scenario. If we say, and this is how I'm going to show you how Cardiff is going to get out, and you know why I want Cardiff to get out.
Yeah.
Because Solskjaer is their manager.
Oh, yeah.
And he's a United player.
Oh, yeah.
And so I don't want him dropping down. So here's my plan for Cardiff. I'm going to call Ole and talk to him.
Oh, yeah. Give him a little breakdown.
Let's say, I mean, Cardiff gets the result this week at Newcastle.
Okay.
So they're on 33.
Okay.
And that gets them out of the zone. Fulham doesn't win, get another point. Maybe they get 1 point. But if they're sitting on 33 and you keep Sunderland, Norwich, and Fulham don't get any points, then they're golden. They're in. They've done it.
Well, that's only, but there's still another week. I mean, they're still going to get another week done.
Well, there is, and they're holding a goal differential on Fulham. Keep that
right.
in mind.
That's
so,
true.
But they're not holding any kind of goal differential on anybody else.
Right.
So they could get out, but it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I just think, you know, it's important to recognize that, you know, these teams need to stay in the Premier League mostly for financial reasons. Once
yeah.
you drop out of there, you lose your Sky Sports revenue, which is massive for buying
mm-hmm.
players, and you're losing revenue every week of teams coming in, you know, big teams coming in. When you're playing home to Manchester United and you're Cardiff, you're packing your stadium.
Right.
I mean, it's financially, it's a massive deal for them to stay in. So these clubs are literally fighting for their lives. As a club and the players, obviously as a player, you don't want to
yeah,
drop down.
You can lose players. Yeah. People want to leave and stay in the Premier League.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so.
Well, what's Fabio thinking right now? Old Man U player, Fabio.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, playing at Cardiff City now.
Yeah, he's thinking, I wish I would have trained harder at Manchester United like my brother, and then I'd still beat him. That's what he's thinking.
That's
but I'm going to say this. If you need to have a good night out in Manchester and you're going to pick between Rafael or his brother, I think you leave Rafael at home.
Yeah.
You go.
Right, I think he's
a better hold on the nightlife in Manchester, and that's why he's now in Cardiff. So it should be good. But, you know, the Premier League, it's always a great time when it comes down. I mean, you remember a couple years ago when City won it literally on the last kick of the season.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a fantastic time, you know, for the game. And you know, the Premier League is, it might not be the best league in the world, but it's certainly the most exciting league in the world to watch. And it is because... Here we are, we're talking about it, and we have been for the last 25 minutes, and there's just a lot going on with it. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. We'll touch back on it again next week. You know, by next week's show, we're going to have a lot better idea.
Of what everybody's standing, for sure. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, actually one other thing I wanted to mention. It's talking about Southampton, just a team that I've been kind of keeping my eye on. I know they're not playing for anything, but I just wanted to give them an honorable mention just to say that I mean, the last time I remember talking about Southampton was Matthew Letizia days in the mid-90s. I mean, that's, Southampton are back. I mean, whether they keep their players like Lallana and Martinez, I think his name is, who's the forward? Ricky Lambert. I mean, just... an incredible group of players. Luke Shaw, left back. I mean, I'm so impressed with Southampton and what they've done this season that I just wish them all the best, and I hope that they all stay together. You know,
well, I will say that.
It's just
on Matthew Letizia. That's great.
Oh, yeah.
That's fantastic.
Remember that? Yeah.
You're dating yourself, as you are me, but that's
Letizia,
fantastic.
Letizia, remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, straight.
But the other question is really how many players from that – you're asking about these players. It's really only City and United.
Exactly.
Really
these rumors are flutter already about how many.
And we'll touch on it as it starts to go. But I've heard Luke Shaw, maybe the United. There's a lot of those. But yeah, I'll give you Southampton. I'll give you that. They've had a good year.
Oh,
you know,
incredible. Eighth place right now. I mean, that's incredible for them. Yeah.
Well, and the funny thing is when they switched out their manager last year.
Yeah.
Everybody couldn't believe what was going on, and they were very upset. But
yeah, because he got them in there.
Yep, but he came in, he's done a great job, and, you know, it's really, really surprised. Really, really surprised everyone, yeah. So, you know, it's good. It's good. And I think there's a couple teams in that Premier League, you know, if you talk about Stoke, Palace, Hull, and Swansea, those are a few other teams. Other teams, season. So good, solid seasons, obviously. You know, FA Cup final for Hull and whatnot. So, it was a great season, and I'm really looking forward to the end of the season here in the next couple of weeks. So you're listening to Todd Scobber and Aaron Hines from the Touchline for 90 minutes. You can get us on Blog Talk Radio as well as Back Sports Page. Listeners, you can call them and talk with us live at 760-283-0846. There's a long queue for that that call, and trust me, the phone lines are just banging out here, Aaron.
Oh, yeah,
my computer's going to blow up. It's got smoke coming out of it. You can also text us here at 360-920-7 comments. Or any welcomes to the new co-host, Aaron Hines.
Thank you.
So, we're staying in England. going to go to one of my favorite topics, Manchester United. Let's just start with the stacking of David Moyes. Really, it had its merits in it.
It did. I think I just want to say I really like David Moyes. I like his philosophy. I see why Ferguson chose him. He was a, you know, Scotsman, honorable man, decent guy, hardworking, you could trustworthy guy, somebody that they thought would take Manchester United for the next, you know, 10, 15 years and, you know, put him to new heights. But I guess there was one flaw in the fact that David Moyes had not ever won anything, and we all saw why. We saw why. I mean, the guy was, you know, it was like somebody handed him a little bag of gold, and he just wanted to bury it in the backyard instead of, like, getting it out and investing it. And, you know the story. He just didn't take any risks. He took no risks. And it was painful to watch Manchester United week in and week out, you know, keep the ball right around the half-point line, but never actually anybody making any attacking runs. It was just all the swerve and swagger of Manchester United was just out the door. They just were absolutely terrible. They were terrible.
Well,
and they were losing teams that had no business winning in Old Trafford. And, you know, I think it had to happen.
I think you said it perfectly, though. I mean, I think Ferguson obviously made the choice for certain reasons. Scotsman, great guy, hardworking. He'd done a great job at Everton.
Yeah, he did.
Great job at Everton, no question. But you said it. There was just one problem with the whole hiring. He can't coach. That's the problem. He can't coach. What he had at Everton was a very thick team, a hardworking blue-collar team, and it's easy as a tactician to coach that group of players because you're always pushing them. They're the underdog role. You can play that underdog card to your players constantly. But when you come in and you have real players and you have players that are experienced players and you have to deal with them going on international duty and you deal with them playing, you know, how are you going to rotate your squad between FA Cup, Champions League, league, we have to play the right guys. And that's where Ferguson was a genius. Now, I'm not comparing Moyes to Ferguson. I don't expect him or anybody else to be Ferguson because Ferguson is a genius. That's why he was knifing. You've got to have some sense of what you're doing. And there were so many calamities along the way, and it really started before Moyes even arrived. When they took away Ferguson's backroom staff and let Moyes bring in his entire staff, which, mind you, included Phil Neville, who's a guy who understands the culture at Manchester United, it was never going to work because being a United player is knowing the culture there, like a Giggs does, like a Scholes does, like a Nicky Butt does. And Moyes just didn't know that. Moyes didn't know what that was all about. Moyes has no idea what that's all about. And so, you know, if he would have walked in and had all of Ferguson's assistants from last year.
Yeah, Phelan and...
Then now he's coming in. He doesn't have to, you know, it's a much more comfortable situation.
Right.
But you bring him in and let him bring in his whole staff, you're not going to get what worked at Everton is not going to work at Manchester United.
Exactly.
And I don't know how you could think that. But we've got a couple examples here. I'm going to let you tell your beach story because that's a classic one. But another classic story is Moyes has pulled Rio Ferdinand. He's pulled Rio Ferdinand and Johnny Evans into his office and showed them film of Joe Yelka and Everton center back from last year saying, I want you to play like this. And Ferdinand looking at him going, you got to be crazy, you know.
Were you guys in fifth place and we were winning the Premier League at that point?
Right, exactly. So he's trying, you know, Moyes has clearly come in thinking what works at Everton is going to work at United, and it's not.
Yeah.
It was never going to work, and it was a huge mistake from the beginning to fire the entire backroom staff. They should have left him in place, and it would have been a much smoother transition. That's a transition. You know, I mean, the thing that Alex Ferguson hanging around the stands during games is a good transition. That's not a transition. It's a day-to-day deal, and they just didn't do that well. So, you know, I mean, I just think Moyes clearly wasn't ready, wasn't ready for the big time, and, you know, I want to hear the beach story again. It's just classic. I mean,
the beach story
is a prime example.
Yeah, you said it. You said it, Todd. He wasn't ready for the big time, and we already touched on it with Real Madrid, talking about Ancelotti going in. He knows. I mean, that's a whole other animal to go from a mid-level club, even a great club like Everton, which has that's a big club as far as the Premier League goes. To go to a team, like Manchester United is a whole different thing. And here's the example on the beach. So they're on their Asia tour. I told you, a year before that, Moyes had gone with Everton. They went for a training. and they took the bus, and the bus was going by the beach, and Moyes goes, oh, let's pull over, and we'll let the boys have a walk. This was in Australia, with Tim Cahill, by the way, who's Australian. They walk down the beach, no problems, no issues. They go for a walk, no one approaches them, no one bothers them, no big deal.
Nobody knows who they are.
Yeah. So then they, you know, get back on the bus and go on their merry way. So
that's you and I walking down the beach.
Yeah, exactly. You know. No, maybe you might get a few people mom you. But,
I don't know.
Anyway, so you know, Manchester United, now he does the same thing. So typically when Manchester United travels, they have they work with the local police and everything, with Manchester United's private security, just to make sure, you know, things like this don't happen. Well, Moyes says, hey, let's pull over, let's go for a beach walk. So they pull over, get on the beach and start walking around, and they're absolutely mobbed. And Moyes is like, well, what do we do? Well, they get dragged into a pub. They have to hide at the top of the pub while the crowds are just streaming around them. And I think at that point he's like, that shows he had no idea the kind of popularity that the club and the kind of demand that people have for this club.
Just no idea, just the magnitude of the
club.
I mean,
you can't do that.
3 summers ago when I was back in New York City with a couple guys, and we had access with Manchester United. They were here on their tour. They were playing the MLS All-Stars, and we got invited back to the hotel in Hoboken. They were staying at the W, and we had been watching training. And so we went back, and, you know, we followed the bus back to the hotel, and we got out, and we had to walk through. I mean, there was probably 300 people just waiting for them at the hotel.
Yeah,
I mean, scratching
exactly
on the windows outside to get in. You know, I mean, they were looking at me going, yeah, he's a short little skinny guy.
Is this a new signing?
Yeah, he's clearly not on the team. But it showed me, it gave me a real good idea of, you know, just how big this club
right
is. It's a world club. And, you know, Moyes, to me, you know, like we said, we could say it all day. The guy, yes, he did a great job at Everton. It's a mid-table club. Maybe he should go to Fulham next. Maybe he should go to Hull. Or that's where he belongs,
right,
because he was a blue-collar guy. He is a blue-collar. He was a blue-collar player. He's a blue-collar guy. That's where he's going to be most comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, to me, I'll be dead honest. When I looked at him, I didn't see the Manchester United coach. I saw Sloth from Goonies. The guy chained up at the bottom in the basement. I mean, he had this confused, perplexed look on his face at all times. Whether they were ahead, tied, or behind in the press conference, pregame, he just had this confused
never
look
comfortable
on his face. Like, he never looked comfortable. He never looked like he was in his own skin.
Right.
And you know what? I mean, that's not a knock on him, because, to be fair, I mean, I'm a coach now. I couldn't coach Manchester United. I'd love to get the chance, and that's giving me the chance. It's not like I'm going to turn it down.
Right.
It's not like if Alex Ferguson calls you up and goes, Heinzman, Moyes is out. Giggs is in now, but we need you.
And I'm like, why?
Yeah.
And then I'd be like, oh, I'm there.
You're right. You're going to go from coaching your U12 girls, and you're going to go,
yeah, I'm in.
And you're not going to think, holy cow, I've never coached this level, I can't do it. You're going to do it. It's Alex Ferguson. It's like God calling you up and saying, you have to do this now. You just do it. So I don't blame Moyes for taking it, and I don't really blame him for being terrible at it, because I don't think – I don't think that the club set him up to succeed. They really didn't. It was an aging group of players. It is an aging group of players, especially in the back. And, you know, letting him keep his own backroom staff just didn't help him. As much as he probably wanted him there, they should have said, no, this is the way this needs to happen. So,
and which is an interesting argument, because that's talked about being talked about then, you know, with the Van Hall thing and, you know, the whole coaching thing, which we'll talk about a little bit. But.
Let's go there. So what's next? Dig the in is the greatest thing to me that's ever happened in this club, because when I think Manchester United, I think Ryan Giggs. I just he is the quintessential United player. I mean, the guy's older than I am. He's still playing. I can't even play over 30s on Monday without limping for 2 days. This guy, what he's been able to do, his body, his mind, and his commitment to the club, there is nobody better to take the helm than him. And there's no surprise that if you watch that game, his first game in charge, and see those players and how they play for him, you know a team when they're playing for their coach and they believe in their coach. You can see that. And you can see a team that doesn't believe in their coach. We see it every week here with the Seattle Sounders. And you could see it with United and David Moyes. You saw a different team, a different character, a different spirit in that team. And I thought it was just a special day, Aaron.
Yeah, I totally agree. It was actually seeing Manchester United wake up and play for the first time this season. It was unbelievable. And what I liked the most, actually, was sitting there looking at Ryan Giggs and then sitting next to him, excuse me, Nicky Butt, and sitting next to him, Paul Scholes, you actually had a feeling of like, oh yeah, all is well. They're sitting there. It makes the most sense. I understand, you know, it was Norwich City who are fighting for their lives at Old Trafford, right? So it wasn't the most difficult challenge, but the team reacted, the players looked, the fans reacted. They were just ecstatic. They had the banner up, Giggs tearing you apart since 1991. Yeah. It all fits. It makes sense. And I understand them wanting to bring in Louis Van Gaal because, you know, he has experience at big clubs and Manchester United don't want to get burned a second time. But Giggs doesn't have the experience, but this is exceptional. I mean, the guy's been there since he's 13. It's not like a Guardiola. Guardiola did the same thing in Barcelona. No experience, but throws him in because he grew up in the club. He knows the club, understands the players, understands the philosophy, the fans. Not going to be bowled over. I mean, but Giggs is second home. So I think it makes sense to keep Ryan Giggs. And it also brings into the next point is, can you tell, like the David Moyes thing, can you tell someone, if you come in here, you have to take so-and-so to be a part of your coaching staff? What do you think?
Right. Well, you know, I mean, it's a good point. I mean, here you have Louis Van Gaal. He's obviously got the pedigree and experience to come in and take this. They're not going to make the mistake and hire an Aaron Hines and a Todd Sauer to come in and do this job again. They're not going to make that mistake again. But the backroom staff is a big deal. I think the problem they're going to have is, yeah, Louis Van Gaal, the guy knows what he's doing. He's already got his team of backroom staff assembled.
Yeah.
He's got Kluivert in there.
Yeah.
He's got Frans Hoek as a goalkeeper coach.
Yeah.
He's already got them assembled. And, you know, you read it all in the media. You don't know how much negotiations really going on. You know, Louis Van Gaal is focused on Holland and the World Cup right now.
He never coached in England.
But the question is, you know, can you tell him, hey, yeah, Van Gaal, we want you, but here's your backroom staff.
Right.
Giggs, Scholes, Nicky Butt, Phil Neville.
Right.
Those are your guys. And, you know, Woodsy is your goalkeeper coach. I mean, can you do that? You can. You're Manchester United. Really, you can do whatever you want. Are you going to get him? I don't know.
I don't know if you will.
I think that could be a sticking point. And then the question becomes, well, if he won't come with that backroom staff, do you take him and bring his backroom staff and make the same mistake that you just made?
Yeah.
Now, the other thing that's going to come into play here is, you know, Giggs has been given 4 games. They absolutely smashed the first game. If they're smashing in the last 3 games, it's pretty tough to say, yeah, these guys are gone after they've been there since they were 13 years old.
So where do they go is the thing.
Do you lose them
or do they go back to the coach and the youth guys? I mean, where does Giggs go? I mean, he's not going to –
I see him
maybe playing one more year if he gets –
I think you've got Giggs to play for one more year. I mean, geez, at this point, I feel like he could play 5 more years. But you know, I think you've got Giggs to play one more year. And I think really, if I'm Manchester United, I'm grooming Ryan Giggs to become the next manager that's going to manage this club for the next 30 years.
Absolutely.
He's going to be the next Alex Ferguson.
We'd love to see that.
You're right when you say Giggsy, you know, he's not quite ready for everything that encompasses being a Premier League manager right now. But he's got the things that you can't teach and you can't acquire.
Totally agree with that.
He's got things that nobody else, they could go search the entire planet. He's got qualities that link him to Manchester United that you won't find in any other any other coach anywhere in the world. So I think deep down, I hope they know that. And, you know, yeah, let's give him a couple of years, you know, to work under him and then, you know, give him the job. So, you know, maybe Van Gaal comes in for 3 years because maybe Van Gaal, you know, who knows? Maybe he comes in for 2 while Giggs is getting ready. But I don't think Ryan Giggs leaves that staff no matter what. I don't think he's gone no matter what because, one, he's going to be there as a player next year, no question. And so he's still going to be there. So I just feel – and Phil Neville, because Phil Neville is still there. They've retained him from Moyes' staff.
Moyes' crack team.
Exactly. So, you know, I think that all those guys are still involved, you know, Duke team, reserve team, whatever that may be. I think those guys are in there. I mean, I see them, you know, with a lot of United players, they give them roles within the club for the rest of their lives. So these guys doing what they're doing right now, yeah, I see them being involved in some way. I would like to see it be a Louis Van Gaal or an Ancelotti or somebody that comes in and has those guys as their staff. So let's talk about a little bit. I mean, we don't really know what's been done with Van Gaal. We've got reports that the deal's already done.
Right.
Just waiting till, you know, a few for the season to finish until they announce it. We've got reports that there's hang-ups on the backroom staff, that maybe Van Hall isn't in.
Right.
We've got all these differentiating reports. Is Van Hall the guy, first of all, in terms of what's actually happening? Do you think it's actually a done deal, or do you think this is open to, and they're looking at other candidates?
Yeah, it's a great question. I wanted to touch on one thing, though, Todd, that you said. One thing David Moyes did do a favor for Ryan Giggs, he basically made this next season, if Giggs was to go into coaching, he made it like a nice test season. I mean, they're not in Europe. I mean, all they have to do is get back in the Premier League. There's no games in the midweek at all whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if they win all the way through, they might get a Europa League spot, but I think that's pretty much – I think that's going to go to Everton. But anyways
– Yeah, it's a good point.
You know, all they will have to worry about is getting in the top four of the Premier League. If there is a season to have Ryan Giggs start his coaching career, this is it. This next season is it. So, I mean, I think that's something you have to consider. Is Louis Van Gaal the man? I think he is. I think they're going to sign him, and, in fact, I think they've already done it. But the backroom coaching staff is the big question, which, you know, we can't tell at this point. But, I mean – You know, Krupp said he was out. Ancelotti said he was out. Diego Simeone isn't going to come. I mean, who knows what's going to happen to him.
But let's see. Okay, so let's say that Atletico Madrid wins the Champions League final.
Yeah.
And Real Madrid is upset with that, which they will be.
Oh, yeah.
And let's say they
sack Ancelotti. That's a good point, actually. That's a good point.
Here's another question. Is Mourinho going to get a call? Is Pep Guardiola going to get a call?
Because the Bayern Munich thing is actually...
Because you've had Rummenigge over at Bayern Munich complaining about the team all year.
Which is
ridiculous.
They've
been knocked out in the semifinal. And not just knocked out. I mean, they lost 5-0.
Right.
That's a smashing. So does Pep Guardiola get a call? Because I'll be dead honest, when I knew, I mean, you know, over the in the last 5 years, I would say, I was always hoping that Guardiola was going to become the coach when Ferguson left.
Yeah.
And I also think that as much as I don't like him that much because he's associated with Chelsea, I think Mourinho would be a good United manager.
Yep, he would.
So do these guys get a call?
That's a good point. I mean, you know, Van Hall, especially the Haaland thing, kind of puts them at a little bit of a disadvantage now, especially that you mentioned the Bayern Munich thing. I just assume that Bayern Munich are going to hang on to Guardiola because really, the semifinals didn't go very well. It's 90 minutes. I mean, look what the guy's done in the last few years. He's got him in the German Cup final. They won the league with 7 games to go, a record. I mean, good grief. What more do you want? I mean, so it didn't work out in the Champions League. So what? I mean, you're going to get Lewandowski in the summertime. Mandzukic is going to go elsewhere. I mean, Guardiola is still, for me, the best coach in the world right now, at least the most successful one at the moment. And Ancelotti's a great one, too. But you're right, Todd. If Ancelotti doesn't win the Champions League final, he could well be out. And, you know, especially if Real Madrid, if Atletico Madrid does the double in La Liga, that's saying a lot. And I think you'll see Real Madrid try and pry Diego Simeone away from Atletico Madrid. But there's no way he would go. I mean, I actually don't know. I don't know the guy at all. But,
well,
you couldn't see Real Madrid taking Atletico Madrid's coach to the other side of the city, could you? The guy wouldn't be able to go around, walk around the city. Diego Simeone, one day Atletico Madrid, and then goes to Real Madrid the next day. I mean, there's no way. Personal safety. So, you know, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens. But it's tough. I mean, we can talk all we want. Louis Van Gaal looks like, to me, like the guy that's going to be the one that will take over Manchester United. And he does, like you said, have the track record. He's a great coach, done it in a lot of leagues. He's never coached in England, which, you know, can be a bit of a transition because they don't have a holiday break, which I think it surprises a lot of people. Obviously, they know what they're getting into, but it's another thing when you get into December and, you know, it can be tough, but...
I think, you know, when you talk, let's just go back to Guardiola. I agree with you on Guardiola. I love him. I love the style of football he plays and that he coaches. But the complaint in Germany has been that style. That was Rummenigge's complaint. Too tiki-taka, whatever you want to call it. Not enough getting forward and whatnot. I mean, I like it. But I'm just saying that Bayern and Karl-Heinz Rummenigge is the man there and in Germany. He hasn't liked it that much. There's been some rumblings, and Guardiola said, hey, if they don't like it, then I'll leave, but this is the way I do it, and this is the way he's going to do it. So I'd love to see him end up at United, but I just have a feeling, I mean, it's Manchester United we're talking about. They need a new manager. They're going to go and look at every possible option because the reality is it's like if Alex Ferguson calls one of us and says, hey, you're going to come coach. If Manchester United rings up the phone of anybody and says, hey, we want to talk, they're going to talk.
Right.
They're going to at least have the conversation because there's not a manager in the world that doesn't want to manage Manchester United. There's nobody. It's a great situation. So,
right.
You know, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens. And really, I think this is going to all. I mean, it's going to go down in the next couple weeks. And so, it's going to be really an interesting story to follow and just to keep tabs on as far as who they're talking to and what's going on with Giggs and what's going on with the backroom staff. There's just so many different little pieces to it that it's a fascinating story, especially for somebody like me who is a staunch United supporter. But, Ryan Giggs has come out this week and said his future is still up in the air on whether he's going to carry on playing, looking to become a manager, accept a job on the staff. You know, he is out of contract. He is out of contract at the
right,
end of this.
Right, he just goes year by year.
Season.
Right.
But, you know, I think that everybody wants him to stay,
yeah.
You know, and he's got a lot to think about, but, you know, I think he's just come out and said, he's just focusing on these games and trying to get, you know, trying to win all these games and do the best job he can. I think it's been a transition for him where, he's realized how much goes into the managing and so.
Do you think, Todd? I mean, who would you pick between Simeone, Fanal, Giggs, and Mourinho? I think Pep Guardiola is going to stay at Bayern Munich. Who do you pick between those guys?
Wait, what's my pick again?
You
mean
that
again?
Fanal. You got Simeone, Giggs, and Mourinho.
I would go Fanal with United with Giggs as his assistant, and I would keep bring Fanal in on a.
Oh, you're about to say
three years? 3-year contract. Yep. And I'd bring him in on a 3-year deal, let Giggs maybe play another year next year, be on the backroom staff, coach for 2 years, and then take it out at that point. That's how I would handle it. But
okay.
I'm not handling it.
I got one more question for you. Do you think Ryan Giggs obviously scored in every single Premier League season there's been a Premier League? He hasn't had a goal this year. He hasn't really even had a chance under Moyes playing. But do you think a game against Hull or something next week, or that he'll sub on and just have Nicky Butt manage the team while do you think he'll play in the field one more time before the season ends so he can try and get his goal?
I don't think he's even I guarantee he's not even worried about the goal.
Yeah, right.
But I do think he might.
Yeah, he should.
He's one of the better options still.
Yeah.
So I think he's come out and said that he could play himself, and I think he will, but I think you're going to see it more in the last two games,
not these first two.
I think he just needed to get a hold of that. But the other thing to consider is I guarantee he's training less, and he's focused less on preparing himself, so he won't be as prepared as a player.
Right.
I can see him playing himself in one of these last two games.
And I think, who knows what will happen. Like you said, this is his last. He doesn't have another year on his contract. They could easily fix that. But this could be, actually, I mean, since all this coaching stuff's happening, Ryan Giggs' career as a player could suddenly just pass us by. He doesn't even get to say goodbye on the field. I mean, if there's anybody who deserves that opportunity, that guy, at least one more time going out there for 10 minutes, giving it away, even if that's all it is. But,
yeah.
I mean, he's coaching, he's busy. Fanal comes in, says, no, I don't want Giggs as a player. I want him on the coaching staff, but his playing days are over. And you're like, wait, what? Well, last time we saw him on the field was Champions League mid-March or whenever that was he last played. I mean, that would be sad.
And I don't think United would let that happen. I mean, I don't know. I know it's up in the air and everything is up in the air. I just have to believe that he's going to sign up to one more year. I just have to. This can't be of his career the way it went down. I just feel like he's going to sign and play another year. But we will see. We shall find out here in the next couple weeks, and we will keep you, our listeners, up to date on what's going on with the Manchester United situation. You're listening to Todd Stauber and Aaron Heinzen here on From the Touchline for 90 Minutes. You can get us on Blog Talk Radio as well as backsportspage.com. Listeners can call on the show and talk with us live. 760-283-0846, or you can text in at 360-927-273. You can also listen to the show archived as a podcast also on blogtalkradio.com and backsportspage.com. You can also catch some journalistic genius from Aaron Heinzen and myself as we'll have stories posted in the soccer section. Sports. MLSTheBeat.com, so be sure to check that out as well. We're going to move on. We're going to hit the MLS here. And MLS season just getting started here. It's
going
to be an interesting year with the World Cup right in the middle. That is the downfall of holding your league over the summer. However, it's going to happen. So, but interesting start to the season. And most notably, I'm going to say, Aaron, we're going to start with your old club. Aaron played for the Portland Timbers. 2003 to 2005. Some great years down there in Portland, Aaron.
Yep. Oh yeah. Great times. Short lived. You know, injuries eventually calling it a day on that. But lots of fun.
Yeah.
Before the club really became a massive club that it is now, although it still had a great following back then. But yeah, Major League Soccer. Portland Timbers. No wins yet. No wins.
Zero wins. It's shocking because I felt coming out of last year, as much as I dislike the Portland Timbers, sorry, Aaron, as much as I dislike the Portland Timbers and I dislike Caleb Porter, I just think he's an arrogant guy that has been handed the keys to this. But I think he's done a good job. I think coming out of last year, I really thought they were going to be one of the teams, you know, that were going to be on the spot this year. They are. It's a long season, Aaron, and you know, you've seen this before. Maybe they struggle at the beginning of the year, and, you know, they get the points to get in the playoffs. And, you know, it's all about peaking at the right time. But it's certainly a shock to be here 8-9 games into the season, and the Portland Timbers haven't won a game.
Yeah, I think, and their attacking actually isn't bad. But 13 goals against in 8 games, I mean, that's – I was down there for the game between the Timbers and the Sounders, and the atmosphere is just off the charts. I just love it. If you ever get a chance to go to Portland game, it's well worth it. It's definitely one of the best. Other than going to a game in Seattle, it's the best soccer experience you can have in the United States, in my opinion.
Ooh,
you've got
some Portland fans, if they're listening to this, are not going to like that.
Oh,
I would agree 100%.
I think, actually, honestly, I think Portland Stadium is the best located stadium. It's better than Seattle. I mean, Seattle's obviously downtown, but it's a little bit removed from the city. You know, there's the parking lot area and all that. But in Portland, you're literally right in between the buildings. It's like kind of like Wrigley Field in Chicago or something like that, where it's just – smack right there. The train runs right by. There's not a lot of parking for cars other than in between people's homes and stuff. So everybody walks. It's a great atmosphere. Anyways, back to the game.
Yeah, I will say, and just I agree, I went to a game this year, my first Timbers game in Portland.
What'd you think?
Yeah, it was good atmosphere. I like the stadium. It's a little different. I played in that stadium before it was renovated. And so I've always liked you know, the location of that. It is intimate, and
nice.
You wouldn't even, I mean, you just kind of walk up in this neighborhood and all of a sudden there's a stadium there,
right,
kind of carved into that hill there in Portland. But bottom line, as nice as their stadium is and as great as everybody could say Caleb Porter is, I mean, they're sitting on 5 points. They're the worst team in the MLS right now.
Yeah, they have no
and so I mean, I think that they will get it together, and I think that Portland is going to be a playoff team. I do believe that.
Wow.
I will be.
You're saying that.
Yeah, I do. I think that they'll come. I think that you can even look at LK the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Started out slow, very slow, and came in and got in. We know what they did. But you're also dealing with very experienced players on that Galaxy team that you don't have on this Portland Timbers team. So not the kind of guys that can decide, yeah, let's start playing now like a Beckham or a Keane, and all of a sudden, you know, they rattle off 10 wins in a row. But I do think they're a good team, and I do think that they're going to, you know, that they're going to end up, you know, in the playoffs at some point. So.
Right. I think the thing I took away from the game definitely was when Portland was leading Seattle 4-2, the team was literally seemed shocked, and even the fans were kind of like, I can't believe we're winning. We're winning 4-2 on Seattle. And 15 minutes later, they let in two goals. I mean, two horrible goals, I'd have to say, that should never have been scored on a professional team. Anyway,
agreed.
You know, two just backline disasters, and it ended up being 4-4. And Portland kind of, then you could see everybody was like, oh, that's more like it this season. We just let in, I mean, you let in four goals, and it just happened just like that, just in the last few minutes in Seattle. Was able to tie it up. Obviously, that was a few games ago, but, you know, the trend hasn't stopped. So Portland has to take a look at themselves. There's definitely a weakness there. There's a confidence issue. You know, you say they're going to be in the playoffs. I'm going to say they're not going to be in the playoffs. Maybe they'll get it right there. I don't know. The red line seems a long ways away. It's a long way
away.
There's
something wrong
line.
Going on there. You've got a former Sounders player saying they're in, and you got a former Timbers player saying they're out. I don't know what's happening here.
That's just the way I feel, unless they make a few different changes, but we'll see. See what happens.
Let's talk Sounders a little bit. I don't want to talk Sounders really too much, although they are sitting on top of the MLS, tied with Dallas. And, you know, I mean, in my opinion, they've got the best players, so they should be sitting there. You know, they've got the best players, the worst coach, and they're on top of the league. So,
what is it you don't like about Siggy Schmidt so much?
Yeah, we can talk about that. But let's just talk about Dempsey. I mean, the guy's sitting on eight goals. The guy's, you know, eight goals, leading the league. I was at the game last weekend, and I was actually sitting in a field-level suite and was able to just see the relationship and the partnership that's starting to develop between him and Obafemi Martins. And, you know, Obafemi Martins came in last year a little late, wasn't fit, you know, was playing the guy, didn't really, wasn't combining well with any partner they put up front with him. Then Dempsey comes in after that, also no preseason, unfit, not sharp, everybody's up in arms. Oh, my gosh, we paid all this money for Dempsey and he's terrible, you know.
Right.
But I think anybody who really knows the game knew that when Dempsey last year, when all the transfer talk was going on, he didn't get a preseason at Tottenham. He wasn't sharp. He came in extremely unfit and had some injuries come up and whatnot. And, you know, there was a transition. So now you've got Clint Dempsey with going over, spending his time at Fulham, playing games, training every day, getting fit. He's not training with the Tottenham youth team. He's actually getting fit. Now you come in and you see him. And this guy's just at a different level than this week, Aaron. He's just better. If you look at, you know, I'm watching him play last week. He's better than every other guy on that field. He's the way he's thinking. You know, technically, the goal that he scored with the back heel and then got played and the goalkeeper threw it to him and he chipped in.
Yeah.
This guy's operating on a different level in this league. And I think that when Clint Dempsey was signed to the MLS, and, you know, the people in America, not just here in Seattle, this is what they expected out of Clint Dempsey in this league. Agree?
Exactly. Yeah, I totally. They're getting their money now, and it's going to be the big question, obviously, that's looming here is the World Cup. And when Dempsey goes, does Martins go? Martins was called up to the African Nations Cup with Nigeria and won it with Nigeria. I didn't see him play on the field very much, but will Martins go as well? I mean, that is a huge loss. And obviously, this coaching staff knows it's going to happen. I don't know how Seattle's going to adjust that. Obviously, there's going to be a little bit of a break for the MLS, but still, it's going to be a big challenge. And you're right, and Dempsey's heating up. Klinsmann's got to be excited because he's seeing his main striker, you know, other than Donovan. It's exciting, but it's exciting for Seattle. And finally, I was definitely one of those people last year, Todd, that it was kind of up in arms about it because I didn't like what I saw. I didn't like the way he was trying. He wasn't playing very well. He was just kind of, you know, halfing it out there, and this time it's different. It's fantastic.
Yeah, you know, I would agree, you know, that it didn't look great last year, but you just have to, I mean, you've seen him play for the national team so many times. You've seen him play in Fulham for how many years, and you just know that, you know, at some, you know, you just knew that he was going to be this player at some point. I just couldn't see him coming over and being a complete flop. And let's be honest.
Right.
We've been privy to some pretty decent designated player flops here in Seattle. I think almost every single one of them, except for the ones that we've just created on our own. We've decided, oh, this guy's really good. Now he's a designated player.
Right.
And every designated player we've signed here to come to Seattle has turned out to be not just bad, but like a disaster. Like they've fallen out of soccer when they left here. Blaise Kufo, I don't even know where he is. Hey, he's not from soccer anywhere. I mean, you know, when he left here, I think he was playing in Japan, or maybe he was modeling underwear. What he was doing there, but he never played again. And you know, you've seen a lot of guys come in here, and it just really hasn't worked out. So, you know, I think that for the United States and the World Cup hopes, this is the best thing that you could be seeing right now because a confident Clint Dempsey is exactly what we want and exactly what we need going into this World Cup because he's the kind of guy that I've seen this with the Sounders. I mean, he's the kind of guy that if he's playing well and if he's on and if he's, you know, enjoying it, it's good for the group around him. He's the kind of guy that, you know, we talked about this a little bit earlier, that he's the kind of guy that makes guys around him better. I mean, I've seen it. Obafemi Martins is sitting on, what, 8 assists right now. And I think six of those are to Dempsey. And you saw Obafemi Martin's – no, it's four assists, sorry. You saw him last year, and, I mean, I don't think he passed the ball to anybody except the other team last year. But these two in combination, Tim and Dempsey looking for each other. I mean, there's some real special stuff here, last week. I'm actually looking forward to going out and seeing that relationship continue to blossom. But you bring up a good point. I mean, here we're going to get going, and then we're going to have the World Cup, and then we're going to be with Kenny. The Suns will be playing with Kenny Cooper and Chad Barrett.
Yeah, right, exactly. It's going to be – I mean, you know, those guys are – they're good on their time, but it's not Martins and it's not Dempsey.
No, it certainly isn't. But, if you look around the rest of the league here, and, you've got some over in the East there, you've got a huge logjam. I mean, there's really nobody's kind of separated himself. Even Chicago, who also hasn't won a game and has drawn six games.
Right.
They're sitting on 6 points, but, you know, they're really only 6 points out of first place there.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Columbus, who's won three, drawn three, and lost one on 12 points at the top of that. Kansas City, D.C., New England, New York Red Bull below them, all on 11 points. Toronto on 9, Houston on, and Philly on 8, and Montreal and Chicago on 6. I mean, that's a pretty crowded table right there, and there's really not much that separates any of them. On the Western side, you know, it's a little more separation with, you've got Seattle, Dallas, and Salt Lake sitting there at the top, and, you know, you could consider Colorado up there, although after watching Colorado last week, I was not impressed.
Yeah, they didn't look good, did they?
The goalkeeping was shocking.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen better hands on a clock. The guy was terrible. He was just – he was not good. But, you really got some separation there. You've got L.A. sitting there with a ton of games in hand, and I know for a fact they're going to be in the conversation.
Right.
San Jose, Chivas, and Portland sitting down there, you know, I just don't really see, much out of San Jose or Chivas. Like I said, I think Portland's going to climb up there. But, if you look at this, there's a lot of parity, especially in that Eastern Conference. There's a lot of good teams. Obviously, you've got Toronto with the players they have. You've got Michael Bradley and Jermaine Defoe and these players. They're sitting on 9 points. They've got some games in hand, obviously, but you've got a lot of good teams over there. You've got a lot of good players.
Right.
Red Bull, obviously, you've got Henri, and you've got a lot of good players.
Okay,
So I think it's going to be interesting how the World Cup is going to affect the MLS. Because some teams are going to be affected, like the Sounders, much more than somebody else. You know?
I think Toronto as well, with Defoe and Bradley. I mean, that's a huge loss.
Yeah, that's good. Well, that's going to be their entire team.
Yeah.
But, you've got some other teams that can sneak in some points, and I think it's smart for Seattle to try to get as many points as they can right now because they're going to drop some points during the World Cup.
It's going to be interesting. And one thing, actually, when we were going through the standings there, Real Salt Lake has not lost yet, actually. And you and I know the assistant coach little bit. You know,
Craig
our
Weibel.
Former teammate, Craig Weibel. You know, he's got him going up. Craig Weibel, a legend already in the MLS. But it is going to be interesting when the World Cup does come. And I think they're smart to take the break, too. It's devastating for teams, obviously, especially here in Seattle, to watch Martins, if Martins gets called up by Nigeria, which I think he will. But to watch Martins and Dempsey go and then to try and move along with your team, I mean, can you imagine what would happen to Premier League teams if they played in the middle of the World Cup? They'd be playing all their kids.
Well, they don't do it for a reason.
For a reason, exactly.
And that's a whole other topic of us, of our league, the MLS, playing in the summer.
Yeah.
And, and that's just the, it's the reality.
It's reality,
for us, in our culture.
Yep.
Disagree with us playing. Every 4 years, we're reminded that we're a lower tier league. We're playing during the World Cup.
Right.
I think
the world schedule.
And that's a sign that we are because you're not going to your league isn't playing in the summer if you pull the best players.
Right.
And so it is what it is. And as the MLS grows and becomes a stronger league, will they switch to playing a traditional European club schedule? It's possible.
Yeah.
But there's so many other hurdles that come in with that. You know, if we're playing in September in Seattle here, then we're sharing CenturyLink Field with the world champion Seattle Seahawks.
Right.
And I guarantee you the Seattle Seahawks are going to have preferential treatment when it comes to that stadium and training and everything else. It's a difficult sell there. So.
It is. Not to mention, I mean, college football as well. I mean, with the Huskies and, just with college football in general on Saturdays, it's a lot. And football does rule here in the United States. So
Yeah,
I think that would be
the wrong kind of football rules
right,
here in the United States,
right.
And I think just the realities of our culture, and like you said, college football is king in America. You're not going to compete with that. And I think the MLS has been smart to say, no, we're not going to even try to.
Right.
Let's play the league at this time when we're going to be one of the main, you know, one of the main leagues going on. So,
yeah, exactly.
You know, I think they've done well with that, but it will be interesting just going back to the initial point of, you know, with the World Cup and how that's going to affect the league and which teams it's going to affect the most. And, you know, I think if you really look at it, if you're really looking at the teams, you know, you could go team by team and see the players that are going to be lost. But I would say Seattle Sounders, Toronto FC, those are going to be the two teams affected the most by this.
Right, absolutely. I mean, Bradley, obviously a great player in his own right, but we're talking about a striking partnership here in Seattle to lose just like that. I mean, there's nobody else to really play. And like you said, it's going to be those two other fellas.
Well, yeah, the reality is you're going to be replacing probably, I would say, 60 to 70% of the goals you're creating. You're going to be sacrificing that to go to the World Cup. But, you know, that's part of being a bigger club in America.
Yeah.
We've been talking about big clubs, Real Madrid, Manchester United, so I don't want to please don't be confused, listeners. I'm not putting Seattle Sounders or any MLS team, Toronto FC, on that level. However, they are the biggest club here in the United States, or one of the, I guess you could argue that, but they're one of the biggest clubs here in the United States, and that's part of it. You know, we've got the money to bring in these players. They've brought these players in, and the reality is now you're going to lose some of them when they go to the World Cup, so it's just part of the deal.
Right.
That's great. Well, Aaron, it's been a great first show here. Really enjoyed having you on. We're gonna have some next week. We'll be on Thursday, and we're gonna have some. We're gonna calling in a guest. As we mentioned, Bell Salt Lake. We're gonna try to get him on the line. And we've got a couple other guys that we're looking to bring in. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm also just, really looking forward. We haven't mentioned the World Cup, but not specifically. And I'm
coming
really
up
excited for the World Cup. It's just, every 4 years it comes, and, there's always different players and teams and whatnot. But just looking at the teams and the matchups and some of the early games that are going to happen. I mean, Spain-Holland in the first round. I mean, that's fantastic. You can't even that's a dream draw for – if you're not Spanish or Dutch and you don't have to worry about losing that game, it's a dream draw for us because we get to watch that game. But, I think the players that are involved in this world, it's going to be a great summer. It's a fantastic summer.
Well, Brazil – we could just really get into it. But Brazil, that's arguably the country that's most – well, I think it is the country that's most known for its soccer. They obviously won the most World Cups. They seem to be the most obsessed. I'm sure they are. It's played everywhere on the streets. And, for them to host, and it makes not a classic Brazilian team that has been so dominant like we've seen in the past with the old Ronaldo. But this team still is good, and playing in their home country makes them that much more dangerous. And, then Argentina right next door, and we know what they've got. And then,
I think every South American team in this tournament is going to be very difficult. And I love the fact that Gordon Ronaldo got a mention on.
Oh, he deserves it.
It's fine.
Gordo,
yeah. He'll be there.
He'll be there.
without getting too deep into this, which we will here in the weeks as we approach, you can talk about these European teams and whatnot, but bottom line is you're going to South America. And Brazil is not going to be easy to be on their home turf. There's no way they're going to be easy. I think Brazil's kind of been forgotten about because they didn't have to qualify. So you haven't seen them in qualifying and whatnot. But they've got fantastic players.
Yeah.
Neymar is a young guy that's just ready to break out. And what a better stage to break out in your home country in your first, in a World Cup.
Yeah.
And I think Brazil and I think Argentina is going to be extremely tough. I mean, if you're telling me that you're talking about an Argentina team that doesn't have room for Carlos Tevez, that's a pretty good team.
Yeah, it's a pretty good team. Second leading scorer in the Serie A, can't get in the starting lineup.
Yeah,
that's
exactly. That's a good team. So I think they've got some South American teams are going to be very, very, very good, and it's going to be just an exciting time. I mean, if you look at the summer ahead, besides From the Touchline for 90 Minutes being on every week now, which I know is a really exciting thing for all the listeners, you've got the World Cup, you've got the Premier League finish, and all the transfer saga that's going to come. And you know the World Cup is going to hype up all that transfer saga because you've got players that are going to play in the World Cup. I mean, let's just talk Fellaini. Let's talk about one of Moyes' major disasters. I mean, you've got Fellaini who's going to play for Belgium. He's going to be pretty good. Somebody's going to want to buy him, I guarantee you. So you've got these players that are showcasing themselves outside of their normal club environment. So the transfer saga of the summer is going to be fantastic. You're going to have the MLS going on here. And then, of course, as we get into August, we'll have the start of the new club season coming for all the leagues. Just very exciting time. Really looking forward to it and looking forward to being on the air every week with you, Aaron.
Our nighttime
production meetings at the Hilltop Ale House will continue.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Again, you're listening to Todd Stauder and Aaron Heinzen here on From the Touchline for 90 Minutes. You can get us every week on Blog Talk Radio as well as backsportspage.com. And we'll also have stories popping up there on backsportspage.com. Heinzen's got one coming out here about the Champions League, about the final coming up.
Oh, yeah.
And looking forward to reading that story, Aaron, and looking forward to that getting up on the website. But great website. Lots of good stuff on there, so check it out when you get the chance. Until next week, Aaron, great first show.
John, thank you.
Yep.
Great times. Thank you, everybody.
Yep, and we'll see you next week.